Hello. Hello, everybody.
Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt.
That's Jenny.
And that is Liz.
And we're here to scare you. Hey, just a little fact. I have a lot of people saying that we should call everybody our creeps.
Yes. So welcome back, creeps.
Welcome back, creeps.
You creeps.
We're creeps. We're all creeps.
Yeah.
Welcome to another episode. And we have stories for you today.
We do. We have some really good ones as usual because we have the best listeners and friends who are sending us the best freaking stories.
Yes. And thank you for that because it makes our lives easier for sure.
Yeah.
And more interesting. So what do we have for them today?
Okay, so me, I have a really great unknown encounter from Melbourne, Australia. And I also have another story about somebody's visit to an abandoned mental facility. What about you?
I love that. So I have a creepy story about a ghost at a theater. And then I have a story that I haven't read. Jenny just sent it to me randomly and wants me to read it. This story will be like when you get a packet of Airheads and you're hoping that you get the mystery flavor.
You hope for the mystery flavor?
I love the mystery flavor because it usually was, what's wrong with you?
No, I hate the mystery flavor. I like to know what I'm putting in my mouth, man.
Okay, see, here's where Jenny and I are different.
You just told them that.
To be honest, we had this discussion this week where Jenny and I, as far as like food, we're different. Men we think are attractive are so different. We're like a yin and yang.
We are.
Aw, let's get those tattoos and be like we're from the 90s.
Yes. Much older than we actually are. Okay.
I think we should. I'm going to have you kick this off because that's just the groove I want to do today.
I'm going to kick it off. So we're going to start with this. This was submitted by Reddit user Top Legolas. So they say, I lived with my cousin and her boyfriend out in a rural area of Melbourne, Australia for 3 months in 2020, during which I had three separate encounters with what I'm convinced was a ghost. The house itself was big, spacious and spread out, with three rooms and a long corridor. The house was once a child care center that had been rezoned as a private property, so the corridor had two doors that were nailed shut and no curtains or curtain rods, which left the windows exposed all the time. At night, it was absolutely creepy. It was on the main road, but so far back from the street and absolutely surrounded by trees and bushes that the street lights were barely visible. My first encounter was extremely terrifying, and even thinking about it now scares me. I was in bed, long day at work in the hospital during COVID, extremely stressful, so I went to bed around 9:30 p.m. I remember waking up in that slow way you sometimes do at night, but it wasn't because I needed to use the toilet or get a drink. It was because I felt a heavy presence on the end of my bed. I slowly wake up, and the presence on my legs felt heavier. I was trying to control my breathing, trying to move my legs, and the heavy presence moved up my body until it felt like something was crouching on my knees and thighs. I tried to pretend to be sleeping because I felt if the presence knew I was awake, something would happen to me. So I lie as still as I can. I sleep under three blankets, all of them wrapped around me, so I felt like I was safe. Until the blankets started slowly being pulled down from around me. I could feel the blankets being dragged back and the presence shifted until it was on my hips, just above my belly button. I tried to breathe as little as possible as the blankets were dragged off of me and the mattress shifted beneath me as if something was kneeling or standing on it. That was when I started to cry, biting my lips so I wouldn't make a noise as the presence pulled my first blanket off of me and started on the second. I genuinely felt like I was going to die or be seriously hurt, so I lay there in heart-pounding fright. I think I might have, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but I think I might have passed out, because I remember that feeling of lightheadedness and then nothing. The second encounter I had was, once again, when I was in bed, but I was nowhere near asleep. I had tried to watch a few episodes of Collateral on Netflix, but had given up due to stress about an upcoming uni assignment. I was lying in the dark, half covered by my blankets, when something took a hold of my arm and tugged it out of my blankets and held it up in the air. Once again, I froze, pretending to sleep. My arm was perpendicular to my body, up in the air, and I could feel something heavy kneeling on my mattress next to me. I tried to breathe slowly as whatever it was held my arm in a tight grip. I remember desperately saying Hail Mary and trying to casually move my arm as if shifting in my sleep. But all that happened was the mattress shifted as if the presence was climbing onto the bed. And it dropped my arm, which tingled for the rest of the night and felt like it had gone to sleep, or how your elbow feels when you bang your funny bone. The last encounter was an early morning one, because I remember seeing the sunlight through the gap in my blinds. I started to push my blankets off myself and climb out of bed when something grabbed my waist and pulled me back down, wrapping what felt like an arm around my waist. I froze, unable to move, and this presence pushed up against me and something pressed up against my ear and whispered, "No." I remember shaking extremely hard as I pulled myself out of bed and basically bolted from the room, smacking into my cousin's boyfriend who was walking up the hall from their room. I'm sorry that was so long, but I haven't mentioned these encounters to anyone, not even my ex-housemates, because it frightened me so much.
You know what I think it is? And this is a first one for us. I think it's a succubus.
Oh.
That's what I got that. From this.
I
yeah?
could see that.
What are your thoughts?
I hadn't even considered that. I had not considered that until you said it. All I thought about was just something bad. Honestly, the first time I read this story, when I was first going over it, I thought, okay, maybe she's just having some weird sleep paralysis kind of thing.
Oh,
you know, initially. Mm-hmm. But the more I got into the encounters, like pulling the blankets, all of that stuff, like you don't have something pulling blankets off of you when you have sleep paralysis. And generally, in my experience with it, I wasn't feeling the weight of somebody moving. It was just the weight was completely on me and I couldn't move at all through the entire thing until it was over, kind of thing. Then after that, I was like, I don't know what the hell this thing is. Yeah. It's just something bad. Like, it's just something bad. But so what gives you like succubus vibes?
Honestly, it's weird. I just got this like sexual energy, it felt like, that it was giving her. And then I thought, it sounds like a succubus. It's at night getting on top of her, pulling the covers off, and the whole no thing at the end.
When I fully read it, I kept thinking, God, this thing sounds like some kind of like guy that just won't take no for an answer.
Yeah.
Like just the touch that it was giving her and that whispering in her ear kind of thing. So now that totally makes sense with what you're saying. It is like a sexual energy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Creepy.
I'm glad she's not around it anymore.
We did have some stories before where we had the couple that moved into their first home together and he said the blankets were being pulled off him. I didn't get that energy on that story, but I definitely get this energy on this story.
And also, thank you for your help in a hospital during COVID times. I cannot imagine the stress. You were in a position to deal with it, and thank you so much for that.
Yes, thank you. That's amazing work, and we hope you're doing good, and hopefully you get some time to, like, yourself now and rest, relax, recharge.
Absolutely.
Goodness. I'm going to read us a story. This is a friend of the show named Josh, and he sent us another story. So here it goes. Thinking on this story always makes my head spin. I think the best way to tell this story is to reveal it to you the way it was revealed to me. I was in my early 20s, and my dad had a second wife. We can call her Laura. Laura had a sister, Samantha, and Samantha had a husband. Tommy was always a fairly rotund guy, but about a month or so away from the 4th of July this particular year, Tommy started to get bigger, like bigger. It got to the point where he couldn't sit down. He couldn't lay down. The only way for him to get comfortable was to take a knee and rest his head on whatever he was next to. My dad told me Samantha and Tommy had been to all kinds of specialists, and no one had been able to figure out what was wrong with him. All the tests came back negative or inconclusive. It was a mystery. He was just growing nonstop. The weekend of the 4th of July, my dad calls me and tells me Tommy has passed away. He had been home in some super rural part of Mexico, a legit pueblo, visiting family with his two boys, and he passed. I asked my dad why Tommy was in Mexico at all, with his health the way it was. What my dad told me next left me stunned. Samantha wouldn't accept that this was just some freak accident of nature. When the doctors all collectively passed the buck, she convinced Laura to go visit an old man she had been introduced to through friends and family. The old man, Hector, was a brujo, a male witch. I never met Hector, but my little sister did, as did my father and Laura. They said Hector communed with the other side by channeling the spirit of a crotchety old Cubano. Hector and his Cubano comrade told Samantha and Laura that what was ailing Tommy would never be identified by the white doctors of the civilized world. Hector's spirit guide had informed him Tommy had been inadvertently cursed and that he would need to go to the source to have them reverse the effects. As it happened, Laura and Samantha were from a neighboring village in Mexico, but Tommy's family hated Laura and Samantha's family. They were never happy with the union. One night, Tommy's sister had brought a plate of food over to Tommy and Laura's house while no one was home. Tommy worked night shift at a warehouse, so when he woke up to get ready for work, he saw the plate of food and assumed Samantha had made it for him, so he ate it. That is when he began to expand. The curse was intended for Samantha, but I never found out why the families hated each other, or why they chose that moment after years of marriage and 3 children to strike. Either way, Tommy had inadvertently absorbed the curse. Once they knew this, a flight was booked, and because they didn't want Tommy to go alone, they had his 2 sons go with him. The plane touched down in Mexico City Friday afternoon. When the 3 of them arrived, no one was there for them. See, the village was about an 8 to 10 hour drive from the airport in Mexico City. Tommy called his family and told them they had landed, but no one was there to pick them up. It turns out the family forgot Tommy and his boys were landing that day, so they told Tommy to hang tight and they sent someone to get him. Basically, half a day later, someone finally shows up. When they get in the car, Tommy tells his 2 boys he loves them, then sits in the back seat between them and falls asleep on the drive into town. But Tommy would never wake up. When they got to the village, they put Tommy in a casket and left him in the morgue, or what passed for a morgue, in the tiny village. My cousins later told me that they had to change the casket at one point because Tommy's body continued to grow and swell after death. He almost burst through the initial casket they had him in. Tommy's family had to pay for the magic they had summoned, and to make that payment, the matriarch had visited Tommy before he was laid to rest and scooped out his left eyeball. The grotesque prize was then offered and accepted by the powers controlling the situation. My cousin told me Tommy couldn't have an open casket funeral because once the body stopped swelling, black ooze began to seep from Tommy's orifices, slowly deflating his body. Tommy was buried, his boys returned home safely, and no one talks about the madness that claimed the life of their father. So, no big deal situation here where...
No big deal. Everybody's body is black stuff, right?
This story is nuts because it feels like it can happen to anybody. And I love food. So, like, now do I have to stay away from food offerings from friends? That really ruins everything for me.
This is going to be the death of us, Liz.
But you know what? I do like the story. And I think this is one the listeners are going to be, like, really creeped out by, too.
I agree. It touches on so many different things of the families didn't like each other. The family was actually trying to get to the wife or her sister, and really they ended up cursing him.
Right.
And just how do you even combat that if you don't know what you're dealing with? And mm-hmm. after so long, he ended up just dying from it.
It shows how magic used in the wrong mm-hmm. way, black magic, can really turn around and backfire. So that's another lesson from
Absolutely.
This. But moving on.
So this one is about an abandoned mental facility. This is submitted by Cassidy. So she says, not too long ago, me and my friends discovered an abandoned building extremely close to our local high school. We were between the ages of 16 and 19, and it was only separated by a highly trafficked nature center with rails from the high school end of it to the abandoned facility. So being in a science class years prior, where we navigated these trails every day, I was surprised to have never found it. After telling me about it at lunch, me and about 3 friends decided to go after school to the building, and I was surprised that it was in a huge property that held about 8 football fields worth of random church-type buildings that were separated by about 50 yards each and were pretty massive individually. The first one we navigated was in the way back, and it was the most run down and one of the largest. The back door was propped open with a brick, and once you entered, you were exposed to a very long, narrow, dark hallway with many doors opening up to it and the smell of moldy drywall and dust. The wallpaper was creepily peeling off just about everywhere, and walking down the hallway, we noticed that some rooms were in a relatively 9 out of 10 condition, while the others had the drywall between them completely rotted out, leaving a pile of disgusting brown and green rotting material with the ceiling caving in. After we explored the entire building, we realized that it was completely symmetrical in a sense. And eerily, each room was labeled with things like bedroom, dining hall, etc. And we found rooms that seemed to have used padding and heavy doors that were recognized to be little cell-type rooms for angry mental people, calm-down rooms. After realizing this and reading an old boiler note we found in the boiler room, which had stairs leading to a completely flooded basement, which was creepy looking, it read that this was an old mental facility. We found a room that my friends had set up previously with about 8 chairs set up in a circle to smoke. And we came back a few days later with literally 8 people, and it was pretty lit, being midday and safe feeling, until one of us had the idea to start scaring each other and separating from the group. Everyone kept doing this for about 20 minutes, sneaking away with a buddy or two to slam doors and jump scare the rest of us. However, we started to notice that we weren't alone. There was someone or something else in the building with us. Me and my friend Twig went off to sneak from the rest and scare them as usual, when we noticed feet from the other side of the door, saw the door rattle like it had been kicked or punched, and then saw the footsteps walk away from under it. Scared shitless, we ran back to the rest of the group still in the chair room and told them, but they didn't believe us as everyone kept saying they saw something, and we assumed it was bullshit and everyone was trying to scare each other. Eventually, someone had a grand old idea for us all to congregate in this chair room and be completely silent and listen for noises. And to our surprise, we all heard sounds from the other side of the building, echoing towards us. Furthermore, me and a friend, about 10 minutes prior, due to pure boredom, both threw chairs down the hall to make a noise to scare everyone. And when we looked back down the hall seconds later, we noticed the chairs were very far down the hall, about 30 feet. With all of this going on, we dipped very quickly in our cars, left, and never came back until about a week later, when we found all of the windows had been smashed, not by us, and the doors that were open were all boarded and locked up. We think the city's keeping these buildings locked up for a reason, or if maybe they know something is lurking in the moldy, despairing darkness. Good thing they did.
Anytime you're in an abandoned mental facility, there's going to be so much energy and vibes and feelings there. I do think that it's never a good idea to go to one. Saying this, I did
you
go
say
to
that?
One.
I was going to say. You know. See, what I loved about this story, what really caught my attention is how much it reminded me of my old trips to Jefferson Davis Hospital before they turned it into artist lofts and such. There was that abandoned hospital in Houston that it was a regular hospital and then it was a mental facility. And it was beautiful. It was such a beautiful place, but it was terrifying. And I remember one of my old coworkers back when we worked at Hot Topic, because we were so cool, she saved a lot of the files. And reading the files was terrifying. Some of them were obviously like, wow, this person should never have been in a mental facility, because it went back to when you could be put away for easily fixable things or things that should have never been considered a mental health issue. Just being a woman with strong will and things like that. But doesn't this remind you of things that you did as a teen?
It reminds me of
and would still do. Let's be honest.
It reminds me of living in the UK and we went to an actual abandoned mental facility in Liverpool. And it was this organized event and it was a lot of people and really creepy because there was like the old chairs and old locker rooms and just everything had this like very dark vibe. And when I go to these things, I tend to always be singled out because as Jenny knows, like I do a lot of psychic work on the side. So they singled me out in the locker room and were like, everybody's going to fuck off. If you can sit here and have a conversation.
Sure.
What do you want me to say?
Hey, everything's what's fucked. What's up?
Yeah. How are you doing? But I do think, obviously, like you said, there's so much tragedy in this and so much is, it's just sad. So these places always make me feel sad.
Yeah.
Because it's my story. They make me feel sad.
They make me feel sad. They're a sad place. They're a tragic place because we didn't have the regulations in place to treat people like humans back when they had these types of things. We've talked about it so many times, whether it's an actual spirit haunting or whether it's residual energy, there's going to be a lot there. There's going to be a lot involved. And then, of course, you can go, hey, if you're there with your friends exploring what the hell makes you think there's not a bunch of other people doing the same thing. That's always an option. Yeah. But you just look at everything going on there. Hey, did I hear footsteps, but there was never any running away or never any coming? Or we never saw an actual person, but this thing happened. You just context clues, as they say.
I think it's great. I do love the story. And thank you for, you know, sharing it with us, Cassidy, because that's, it's great. But hopefully, maybe you have some other ghost stories you want to send us. Maybe you've had some other experiences, because it sounds like you like getting in there and seeing things. So, yeah. I have one more story for you guys. Yay. And this one is from Shane Meyer. And it's called The Phantom of the Dance Floor. So, cool title. Let's just jump into it. In my previous post, I mentioned that I worked at a concert venue that was very haunted. And I'll tell you about my first paranormal experience there and a little background on myself. I grew up loving ghost hunting shows, horror movies, stuff about aliens, all of it. As I became a teenager, I became more skeptical and scientific-minded about it. I still loved those shows, but I began thinking that none of it was real. I was 18 and figured if I'd never seen anything as supernatural by now, that I never would. Out of high school, I started working at a local concert venue with a checkered history. Opening in the 1920s as a movie theater, it served as a speakeasy at one point. Eventually, in the 60s or 70s, they cleared the projectors out and used the stage behind the silver screen to put on concerts. The manager used to walk around telling us all the known ghost stories. She would point to a wall, we'd follow the wall around the corner and another corner, until we realized that this section of wall must contain a 10-foot deep hollow spot. What was in there? Liquor from the speakeasy days, cash, the bodies of rival mobsters. These hollow walls were everywhere in the venue. They were supposedly underground walkways that led from the old speakeasy to the old brothel and then to the city hall. And what about the ghosts? What about the little girl people would see on the stairs? What about the blood stain near the exit, the one that always came back no matter how hard you scrubbed? What about the strange reflections in the dark mirror at the top of the stairs? My friend, we'll call him John, got me a job there setting up for shows in the day and bouncing at night. It was a great job just out of high school. We'd see bands we liked, then party all night once the shows let out. We'd hate on bands like Foreigner, whose rider list was a mile long and demanded exotic fruit that wasn't available in our area. We'd hang out with Dave Mustaine as he told his crew to walk behind me, roadie. We'd marvel at classics like Zapp and Roger and Earth, Wind & Fire, and we'd rock out to King Diamond, Machine Head, and Danzig. But before the shows, it was just me and John, prepping the venue, loading in kegs and booze, filling ice trays, stocking the backstage rooms and bathrooms, just boring stuff. We'd load a bin full of ice and beer and food, walk in from the kitchen under the stairs, through the large doors past the bar, down the three dance floors, up the stage to a ramp, and up the three flights of stairs to the dressing rooms. During setup, the whole place was on lockdown. Chains and padlocks were wrapped around all the handles of the double doors. The stage doors were chained and padlocked. The only way in or out of this whole place was under the stairs and out the office, all the way at the front of the building. On one of the tedious trips hauling beer up to the dressing rooms, John and I were near the dance floor closest to the stage. We both looked up at the same time. Not 10 feet in front of us was a man with his back to us. He wore a cape and a wide-brimmed hat with, of all things, a feather perched up in it. He dashed up to the stage door. John and I looked at each other, knowing no one else could be in the building, and certainly no one dressed the way this man was. Did you see? We both blurted out at the same time. This guy looked like he was in Phantom of the Opera, John said. I nodded, and we both ran after him. After all, our other job was security. We ran up the ramp behind the stage door. The exit was chained and padlocked, so he could only have run backstage. We ran through the door and looked around. The stairwell was empty. The stage was empty. The backstage door, padlocked. Nowhere for him to go. Nothing there. Where the hell could he have gone? We did our due diligence and checked that he hadn't jumped off the stage and run out through the office. We checked the dressing rooms. There was only a tiny window 3 flights up. I suppose he could have shimmied down the tree next to the window, but there was no way a large man in full costume was crawling through that tiny window. We were trying to convince ourselves that this was a full-grown man that had somehow escaped us. Looking at that tiny window and realizing there was no way for him to get out, John and I both knew he hadn't gotten out of the building. He had just disappeared. We stopped trying to convince ourselves that the man in the costume was really a man at all. We didn't know what he was, but the word was settled on ghost. Note, I know this story is a bit long, but has a lot of setup for future stories. I only worked in this theater for a year, but in that time, so many crazy things happened. We began to develop theories about why there were so many ghosts, but we'll get to that, so have some patience. Next time, we'll go into the projector room where a bartender had an encounter with madness.
Okay, first of all, he says Phantom of the Opera. I say Cat Williams or some other pimp. Because as soon as he described that outfit, I was like, oh,
pimp. Pimp. Love it. I think, obviously, we just talked about massive residual energy in places. This strikes it for me like another residual energy place where creepy things happen.
Have you ever seen High Spirits?
The movie?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So this is homework for everybody, our listeners and for you. You have to watch High Spirits. It's actually like a comedy, but it's about this man who owns this like castle. I think it's in Ireland and it's haunted and he's trying to save it because they're going under. So he tries to fake scary stuff so that people will want to come there. But there's actual residual energy from these real spirits. And it's really hilarious. It's got Steve Guttenberg and beautiful Daryl Hannah and Liam Neeson back when he was like, ugh, so gorgeous. It's like this masterclass on the whole residual energy thing. As a kid, that's where I started, got the idea of how that works from it. I know that sounds silly because it's a comedy, but it's actually like really good. So that's homework for everybody.
Here's the thing. Like, I love a good ghost movie, and Jenny and I are both the same way. We like love horror movies, and I'll watch a goofy one or a scary one. Like, it's hard to get me upset, but I can tell our listeners the two that really freaked the shit out of me and still do were the original Insidious. So creepy. I love it though. Oh god, I love it. And then, oh, and the remake of Evil Dead I thought was amazing.
Yeah,
that one was like good. That creeped me out.
The one that I can't cover my eyes and my ears is White Noise. I don't know what it is, because we have so many opportunities to run into a staticky TV or a staticky radio. And I'm like, oh god, no, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I do, but I don't.
But yeah, great episode, in my opinion. I'm really
this
happy
was really, that we were really great.
Great today.
So everybody's so goal should go be to go out and be great as well.
Thank you for all the accolades. We are such a small growing podcast, and every week we're not sure like how we're gonna do, and it's like it's scrappy and it's new. So if you do want to leave us a review, those things are massive. They help us so much. And you can even go on to our Anchor link or Spotify and you can leave us a voice message.
What?
Did you know that, Jenny?
I didn't know that. Yeah. I would love to get voice messages. Oh, did we ever I can't remember if we mentioned Gus the Surfer. Did we mention Gus the Surfer?
I don't think we have.
We have not, but he left us such a great review.
Please feel free to leave us a review. Share us with your friends. Leave us a story. Tell us what's going on. Like, we love to hear from you. And there's many facets where you can get a hold of us. tftcsub@gmail.com. We have an Instagram. We have a Facebook. We're here.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of we're here... Yeah. Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride
Month to all our guys, gals, and non-binary pals. And we're here. Reminded me of it. The chant, we're here, we're queer. Get used to it.
Yeah.
That's what made me think of it. But I wanted to wish everybody a Happy Pride Month. And last year sucked because nobody could celebrate. And I want to wish everybody beautiful, wonderful, joyous celebrations this year.
And love.
Yes.
All the love.
Love is love.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week with another episode.
See y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.